Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Francis.
How are you this morning?
I'm very well. How are you doing?
I'm great.
Yeah?
I'm great. I'm actually great for a number of reasons. One is I just sent out, before we got here today, I got the email rolling out to our many thousands of email subscribers, which you, if you listen in listener land, you can subscribe if you go to restaurantguysradio.com and just send us a note. We love to hear where you're calling from. But we are the it's time to announce the New Year's Eve concert that we are performing, producing. We're not performing. No one will come. we're producing this year. Again, it's the second annual. We've taken the Crossroads Theater in downtown New Brunswick, and we ourselves are also concert producers.
It happened.
Crazy. We
like
did
it or not, we're in the business.
Starting last year. We're producing a concert at the Crossroads Theater, which is, of course, next to our restaurants. And a lot of people will come to dinner before or after the show on New Year's Eve. But you don't have to come to our restaurants. You can just go and see the inimitable... It's a fun word to say on the radio. Inimitable.
I'm not going to try.
One too many N's and not enough T's. The inimitable Jackie Naylor, who is a great jazz musician.
One of my favorite people to see live in the world. One of those people. When you listen to a lot of music, there are certain performers who are better, I think, through their CDs, and better performers who are better, and some performers who are better live. I mean, I've been to a lot of people's concerts, and she's just one of those people who electrifies live. Live, and I, you know, I love her CDs, I really do, but I don't think it's the same kind of music as you hear when she's live.
I have her Shelter CD in my car, and I listen to it all the time. But the interesting thing is, Jackie has. Last year we produced this concert. It went over very well. Some people came all dressed up in black tie. Other people didn't. We have a champagne reception because, well, we're restaurant guys. We're concert promoters, but we're also the restaurant guys. You have to have champagne. So we have champagne at intermission. Which is sponsored by Champagne Lenobe. The Lenobe family champagnes are remarkable champagnes, and they're doing a champagne toast at intermission, as well as a toast at midnight. If for those who want to join us at the restaurant at midnight, the concert's at 8. But Jackie,
Champagne Lenobe, also a spectacular champagne house.
But Jackie, last year she had 5 albums to her credit and international acclaim. Recently, The Wall Street Journal has written a big article about Jackie and how great she is. They've joined, you know, Esquire, Vogue magazine, and Jazz Times, and a lot of other publications. But the thing, I don't even know if you know this, Mark, but we knew Jackie was coming out with a 6th album, which was just released, and she's touring the country promoting it, doing concerts, and actually she's also touring internationally. It's a holiday album. And Jackie does this this thing that's getting written about a lot. She kind of plays one song over another song, and she calls it smashing. She calls it acoustic smashing. And she does a lot of really classic stuff, and she does some modern stuff as well. And so her album is called Smashed for the Holidays.
And one of the things we're going to be doing between now and New Year's Eve is we're going to be giving away Smashed for the Holidays to some of our listeners and some of our email listeners, and you can listen to us over the next 6 or 7 weeks and exactly how we're going to do that.
And if you want to hear some of Jackie Naylor's stuff, you can go to stageleft.com or katherinelombardi.com and just click on events and look at New Year's Eve. And there's all the details about the concert, and there are also some audio clips. And we'll try and have her on the show before, you know, sometime between Thanksgiving and New Year's.
Oh, for sure. We'll definitely have her on. You know what? I think we should get Tom Artuso busy. Why don't we give away one of those Smash for the Holiday albums right now? We'll give it to, let's say, the 4th caller, and we'll see if we can get Tom hopping.
Okay.
Tom looks a little surprised in the booth. We didn't tell him we were going to give away an album.
You didn't tell me. 732-545-9282. We don't give stuff away too often on the radio. 732-545-9282. If you want a copy of Jackie Naylor's new album, Smashed for the Holidays, give us a call. The 4th caller we'll give you the holiday album.
I love when we have little surprises like that.
I'm not so crazy about them. It really throws me.
Tom Ortuso right now actually scrambling. He's like, we're doing a contest. Yikes.
Yeah, and also if you want to email us, we'll send one of the emailers. Email us with the reason why you deserve the Jackie Naylor Smashville Holiday CD, and we'll send you one as well. Mark, not one big for planning. It's going to take a couple weeks to get because we don't have them yet, but they're in the mail. So as soon as we get them, we'll send them on to you at 732-545-9282. Okay. The holidays. Speaking of the holidays, I read an interesting topic, not necessarily about food. Walmart has announced pretty good earnings.
They're going to be open for the holidays this year, Walmart?
Well, you know, they've announced pretty good earnings because...
Is that how you're tying this all in?
No, because they've got people into their stores to do holiday shopping earlier than ever before.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not even Thanksgiving yet, and they've seen the initial holiday bump.
We also have an early Thanksgiving this year. So having an early Thanksgiving, that's an extra full week of shopping time. My guess is the season's going to be awesome for retailers because you get that extra week.
Well, that's not what the people are what the financial experts are saying. They're saying it's going to be a weak season. But Walmart got people in extra early. I think that, and I'm seeing Christmas decorations pop up. Okay.
I saw Christmas decorations on October 30th. I saw my first Christmas decorations. I was like, it's still Halloween.
Well, here...
I mean, where's the black cat? You can't have Christmas bells up. What are you doing?
Well, here's the problem. Here's the problem, and I think that we're experiencing something in the restaurant that's unusual. The problem is people are pushing the season. The retailers are pushing the season. Mm-hmm. You can go out now and see Christmas trees in retail stores. And it should be... by rights, 30 or 40 degrees out right now. Okay,
that's true.
It shouldn't be December, but it should be at least cold.
Here
by
in
now.
The Northeast, again, we have some listeners throughout the country and throughout the world,
right,
but we're in New York, New Jersey. We expect real seasonality here.
Well, but it's still warm outside.
Mm-hmm.
I put the heat on for the first time a couple of days ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that's affecting how people are eating. And
it's affecting what's available. Again, I had fresh New Jersey tomatoes, I'm going to say, on October 20th.
Yeah.
Somewhere in that area, I had fresh New Jersey, local grown, not hothouse, grown out of the ground tomatoes.
But I'm also talking about what people want to eat because there's a sort of a... Mm-hmm. There's an idea of coming up to Thanksgiving, what would be traditional. And I'm telling you that we've met with the chef on a number of occasions, and we haven't rolled the menu into
same
familiar territory.
Same thing with the cocktail menu.
Yeah.
How do I put a hot toddy on the cocktail list when it's 68 degrees
right.
outside?
Who the heck wants that, you know? but you know, it's interesting how, we have certain cultural assumptions that are, of course, geographically specific.
Yeah.
But
let the steam warm the inside of your nose. The inside of my nose is 80 degrees. Well, get away from me.
I've always thought it was incongruous for me when I would look at, people at, Santa Claus is ringing bells in L.A., thinking, aren't they hot, But there's a corollary to how the seasons are progressing in the restaurant, and I think how people are probably eating at home,
mm-hmm.
because you would expect it to be, it should have been cold for 3 weeks by now,
right?
Which would prompt people to want to eat different things, and I just think it's an unusual step and change.
Well, it's not just that. The seasons also mark we eat more generally when we're cold than we do when we're
mm-hmm.
warm,
mm-hmm.
which is that's a natural fact of human physiology.
And my cocktails in the summer are gin-based, and in the winter are whiskey-based. I don't know what to do. I'm really at a quandary at the beginning of the meal. But
we're going to have to come up with some gin-whiskey mixes.
But I'll tell you what's always in season is chocolate, and we're going to have Bill Buford on after the break. He's one of our favorite writers about food, and he wrote a tremendous article recently and did a lot of research on extreme chocolate. We'll find out about that more in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. The time is 11:15.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants. Joining us today is Bill Buford. Bill has been on the show before talking about his wonderful book, Heat, and many of the other books that he's written. He's joining us today to talk about chocolate. He's written an article in The New Yorker just recently about Frederick Schilling, an entrepreneur who started a maverick chocolate company, and Bill's journey following him to the ends of the earth talking about chocolate.
Bill, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Very happy to be on it.
You really don't ever do like a fluffy little piece, do you?
No, I kind of went deep on this one. In fact, I went even deeper. It was about twice the length of what ran, and for a while we were wondering if I was ever coming back.
Yeah. Well, now what we talked before about your prior books and what sort of prompts your interest. What prompted your interest here? Was it you're interested in Fred Schilling and this crazy sort of take on this startup chocolate company that is, you know, enigmatic, or is it the production of chocolate itself that drew you?
It actually began, it's not in the piece, but it actually began when I met Johnny Uzzini, who's the pastry chef of Jean Georges here in Manhattan, and I just spent a day with him and watched him working with chocolate. Tempering chocolate with a machine and tempering it by warming it up and sort of tossing it back and forth on a marble counter. And I realized I just knew nothing about chocolate. And it was a much more chemically complex and mysterious thing than I'd ever realized. And I wanted to find out more and ended up hooking up with a guy who I think it was something like some adventure magazine did a little caption about this wacky Frederick Schilling and his Dagoba chocolates, and how he spends most of his time not in the office, but in some, you know, tropical backwater on some dirt road in a four-wheel vehicle looking for seeds that have disappeared from the earth or on the verge of disappearing from the earth. And it felt like sort of chocolate meets Raiders of the Lost Ark. And I hooked my wagon to his Stardust, and I was gone.
You don't really do stories by kind of sitting in your living room and Googling, do you?
That's not really your style. My wife's urging me to do that. She says, you know, you don't really have to get so carried away. Why don't you just sort of behave like normal people and, you know, sit at your desk and write in the morning? You have a family now. I ended up following him to the rainforest of Bahia in Brazil, and just had a wild time. In fact, I can't wait to go back there. It's just out of this world.
Well, let me ask you. It comes up again and again in your article that, you know, people have said you can't really understand chocolate truly unless you're where it's produced, unless you've been to the tropics. Is that true? And why is it true if it is?
I certainly understand much more about chocolate than I did before. And to the extent that it's true because you realize how chocolate or cacao is a fruit of the rainforest. It is a product of the rainforest. It could only have been engendered in the rainforest. And all its peculiar wild qualities are the qualities of a plant that's got to survive amid, you know, hundreds of species and hundreds of predators and hundreds of bacterial invaders. And also in the rainforest, you realize that it's not that the flavor of chocolate isn't so extreme. It isn't so unique. There are lots of other flavors around there. There's a kind of flavor spectrum that it fits in, and it makes sense of chocolate by going down there to see it.
Well, that's the flavors of the rainforest, most of which is not easily exportable if you're not there, but maybe chocolate is.
Not easily exportable, but actually so much of what the things that we like in life come from the rainforest, whether it's vanilla or cloves or cinnamon or tobacco or coffee or any one of the more sort of dangerous alkaloids. Most of our medicines. I mean, when I went into the the rainforest where we were has been where the cacao's been cultivated, so that's been you clear out the floor a little bit to be able to plant cacao trees. But we went on a hike into the virgin rainforest where, you know, no man has been or cleared anything out ever. And as we were walking through, I started recognizing all the plants from the park across the street from my apartment. So much of our plant life actually does come from the rainforest. It's an astonishing spectrum of cultivation and plant life.
One of the things I thought was really interesting that you pointed out in the cocoa pods striving to survive, it's sort of it's like a lot of relationship. It attracts us, uses us, and then it rejects us.
Yeah, you can't. It won't proliferate without some intervention.
One of the peculiar qualities. It's most most plants produce their seeds, and the seeds germinate. These seeds are inside of a pod, until they get out of the pod, they would just wither and die. And so the whole pod is designed for creatures to come along and take a swipe at it and figure out how to get it open and suck up its juicy, citrusy, sweet pulp.
Well, and the seeds sort of don't come out the other side of a bird. They have to, like, the fruit is sweet, so you take that, but then the seeds are bitter, so you spit them out, and that's sort of how the plant survives.
Exactly.
It needs you to spit those seeds on the forest floor.
It's designed for you to suck it up and spit it out. And when you get one of these fresh pods, you realize it's, you know, this is why it exists in a place of monkeys and rats and bats and tribal Indians, and everyone would have regarded this as a kind of a walking on the trail treat. You see this pod, which doesn't even have a branch. It's like, it looks like it's stapled onto the tree. It's just inviting you to take a swipe at it, and you break it open, and it looks disgusting. I mean, it looks like a kind of maggoty, white, gooey thing, but when you dip your fingers into it and put it in your mouth, it's like ecstasy.
You know, Bill, I think the chocolate sales in Central Jersey are going down after the maggoty description, but when we come back into the break, I want to talk more with you about your journey to where it's produced and the mystery of chocolate and where it comes from. We'll be back in just a minute. 1450 WCTC, the time is 1125.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light.
Vogue magazine calls Jackie Naylor the new voice of jazz. We call her family. Jackie has 6 critically acclaimed albums to her credit, including the brand new Smashed for the Holidays. From the Wall Street Journal to New York Magazine to the Village Voice, the praise is universal. The Restaurant Guys present Jackie Naylor in a champagne New Year's Eve concert at the Crossroads Theater in New Brunswick. Champagne at intermission provided by the extraordinary Lenobe family of champagnes. Dine before or after the show at one of our restaurants right next door. The beautiful new Heldrich Hotel across the street has preferred room rates for our guests, so you don't even have to drive. Spend New Year's Eve with champagne, jazz, great food, and the Restaurant Guys. For tickets, menus, hotel rates, or more information, it's 732-828-4444 or restaurantguysradio.com. Spend New Year's Eve with us.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey everybody, welcome back. It's Mark and Francis, the Restaurant Guys, and we're talking today with Bill Buford about chocolate, an article he wrote recently in The New Yorker. You can find out more about it on our website, restaurantguysradio.com.
Bill, so we're in the rainforest eating this citrusy fruit with bitter seeds. How does that ever become chocolate? How do we get from there to here?
Well, the interesting thing is that in most of the globe, it never became chocolate, at least until the Spaniards discovered it. But it was most indigenous tribes would have sucked up the pulp and spit out the seed, and the seed would have germinated on the rainforest forest floor, and that would be the end of it. What's interesting was what happened in sort of Central America, the Mesoamerican cultures, where they realized that the seed is covered with so much sugar that left in a warm, humid environment, it starts to ferment pretty quickly. And in fermenting, then you start to get what is the basis of chocolate. And they were the ones who started deliberately fermenting beans. They've been using fermentation in their food and drink in other parts. And they developed this very sophisticated food that Europeans didn't discover until Cortez reached the Aztecs in 1521, but by then chocolate had been a food for nearly 3,000 years. It's probably the oldest cultivated food on the globe, and by then it also had an extraordinary history and magical associations and religious associations, and was used as money. And
it's still got some of those associations now.
it certainly does, and some of it I realized myself when I was down there, and I was eating fermented dried cacao beans in the way that one might eat, like, nuts or something like that. It was on an all-night drive, and we were eating kola nuts, which have a theobromine as an alkaloid, which is a kind of stimulant, and, of course, cacao beans, and theobromine is the alkaloid in cacao beans. And about 10 beans into my experiment, really liking the flavor, which was kind of a very intense chocolate, I suddenly got a flat-out unapologetic, unanticipated buzz. And it wasn't just caffeine, it was something else. And I'm not persuaded that scientists have come up with a way of really describing what cacao does to you, but I realized that in that buzz I was getting I was discovering why there are chocoholics, why people are addicted to chocolate, why people keep having.
When we come back after the news, we're going to talk with Bill Buford. We're going to talk about the buzz from chocolate. We're going to talk about the chocolate wars going on in the rainforest. And we're going to talk about wading in chocolate almost naked. Sounds like a dream come true. We'll be back after the news. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. The time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Bill Buford is one of our favorite authors. He is author most recently of the book Heat, which you heard him talk about on our show a little while back. We're talking with him today about an article he wrote for The New Yorker having to do with chocolate. Bill, when you went down to the origins of chocolate, to the rainforest, you found a pretty mysterious place where the rule of law is not now and has not been as firm as it is in Western Europe.
A little bit of the Wild West down there.
No idea how wild it was. It was. The truth is, I started reading this novel by Jorge Amado. I think it's called The Violent Lands. And I read it because I'd heard that Diego's family, this is the chocolate maker, was going to see Diego Badaro, whose family has been growing cacao for many generations, was actually mentioned in the novel. And it was only in reading the novel that I realized not only was his family mentioned in the novel, but they were mentioned by their real names. And it really wasn't a novel. It was a kind of documentary history. And this history was just completely wild. I mean, it was just wild, wild, wild. And part of it was because there was this boom in chocolate at the turn of the century, right around the time that Hershey started making chocolate, and it was still very expensive. People made a lot of money from it, and it was like the gold. It was like the new gold rush,
with even more lawlessness.
And there was nothing there. There was, I think when they started, they had one road, and maybe that was it. They had one dirt road in this entire area, so there was nothing there, and they had a. Like the land was got by squatters' right. You say it's mine and it's yours, then you go and file a claim. But since there was no law and they had land disputes, they just burned down the claim office, and then they put up a new one, and then they burned that one down. They put up a new one, they burned that one down. There was absolutely no law. There's still
Where's your claim? Where's your claim? It's in the claim house. Claim house is on fire. My land now.
And the extraordinary thing is, most of this was in the teens, the 20s, and the 30s, and there are a lot of arms everywhere. And most of the guns that people bear are Wild West guns. The guns are 80, 90 years old because a gun is a very prized possession. They've been holding on to these guns ever since the cacao wars, and it's wild.
Let me read a little bit of you talking about the history of the land from your article, if you don't mind.
Sure. Now,
in Baha'i, the Tokai has a historically specific sense referring to a particular kind of isolated rainforest assassination, a hired gunman lying in ambush in a land too big ever to hold him accountable. Amando's father had been the target of one. It may have been partially why he fled the fazenda with such dispatch. There would have been no negotiation. If you wanted a neighbor's land, you kill him. Or you pretend to buy it, visit, bear gift, and then kill him. Or you offer property to a man who's never had it, often an ex-slave, provided he clears and cultivates it, and then 5 years later, never having filed the claim, you kill him. It's an efficient way of getting trees planted. That's
chilling.
That's chilling.
It's chilling. And it took place. And just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people died. And it's kind of an everything that goes on down there. There's just an absolute lawlessness, and everybody carries a gun because you just don't know what's going to jump out of the bushes.
Is it still that way?
It is definitely lawless. And where we stay, the caretaker did his rounds in the end of the evening and kind of stripped down so that he could walk stealthily and quietly. And he was carrying like three guns just to find out, you know, if anything was out there. And I had one alarming moment where something slammed itself against the door. And I still don't know if it was a man trying to get in or whether it was a very large animal. But there's a feeling of anything can go wrong very quickly and no one's going to notice at any moment.
So you were down there on assignment and asleep and someone just started slamming themselves against your door trying to get in?
Yeah. And until then, I'd always found it a little claustrophobic why this caretaker locked up all our doors. All the others were, you know, I was with Frederick Schilling and Diego Badero, who ran the farm. They had had so much to drink, they were completely comatose and didn't surface for another 2 hours. But, yeah, I was there staring at this door as it was being pounded and kind of pushed off its hinges going, okay.
Didn't you wish you'd had a gun at that moment?
No, I didn't think about having a gun. I was just wondering what was going to happen next.
Well, now talk to us about Mr. Schilling. Let's talk to us about the subject of your article. He's a crazy cat, and his chocolate company is Dagoba Chocolates.
Was Dagoba.
He sold it recently to Hershey, but he's still kept on as a consultant, but he's the founder of the company. Talk to us about him.
That's right. And, I think the most appealing thing are the most explaining action was that he hated chocolate. He grew up not liking chocolate, and it wasn't until he tasted a serious chocolate when he happened to be working in a kitchen. He was a sous chef and was chatting with a pastry chef and tasted a little bit of Alrona, the French chocolate maker's chocolate, and El Rey from Venezuela, and realized that he had no idea how good chocolate could be, and his life was changed. And from that moment, he did the research, and he realized that it was a sacred food. It had erotic associations. There's a goddess of cacao who's also the goddess of fertility,
well,
sex.
And an odd turn of events, he's now married to that goddess.
In an odd turn of events, the goddess visited him one night and took him on a tour of the world.
Super extra body experience.
We were in the rainforest when he was telling me about this, and it had been raining so much, we're all stripped down. And because there's no point wearing any clothes, and we were covered with this weird red okra thing to keep insects from biting us. And as he was telling me this story, from the waist up all the way to his ears was covered in goosebumps. Whether we think it's true or not, he clearly thinks it's true, and it went straight to his core.
And so the goddess visited him, and this is after he started the company, and he's on this chocolate mission. He has a dream where he's visited by the goddess of chocolate, right?
Visited by the goddess of chocolate, who gives him a tour of the world, shows the places where chocolate is done by an industrial, virtually slave method, shows the places where the chocolate grows in the rainforest, takes him to the Amazon, where the rainforest is being burned down every day, and basically gives him a mission to use cacao as the fruit to save the rainforest.
So did he get any frequent flyer miles for that journey, or that's a joke. I'm sorry, but no. The
you should be.
Whether or not that's true, this has led to he's not really, though. He sold his company for what, $14 million?
$17 million.
He's not about just the money. He really feels that he's on a mission. What is his mission? What's his plan to save the rainforest?
Basically, the only thing that can make the rainforest profitable to anybody who has rainforest land is cacao. And what you see going on in the Amazon is people are poor and they clear the rainforest and then they raise cattle, or they clear the rainforest and the ashes produce a superficial fertility in the earth, and they grow crops for 3 or 4 years and then they have to abandon them. I get these satellite emails from NASA, and a couple months ago I got the satellite pictures of the annual, this time of year people start burning the rainforest. And there's so many people are burning the rainforest every year that there's an opaque cloud across all of South America. There's like thousands and thousands and thousands of fires all over the rainforest as people are burning the rainforest. So
I saw a cloud like that recently in the news as well. It was over San Diego.
Right, exactly.
It's similar. It's very similar, yeah. Yeah.
Well, except that it's much more damaging in the rainforest. And you write in your article about why, actually, that's particularly damaging the rainforest, and the rainforest can't recover from that as well as a place like San Diego might. We'll talk about that in just a moment more with Bill Buford. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. The time is 11:45.
I think it's great that more and more restaurants are offering larger selections of wine by the glass. Unfortunately, I often find those by the glass wines flat or spoiled. It's been my experience that most wine preservation systems just don't work. Until now. The Vinfinity system was invented by Armando Luis, a mechanical engineer with over 25 years experience in the wine industry. Vinfinity has 3 U.S. patents, but it's so simple I could kill myself for not inventing it first. Vinfinity creates a precise vacuum in the bottle that preserves the wine. Too much vacuum or too little and the wine is damaged. Vinfinity never needs gas and requires little maintenance. One Vinfinity system preserves any number of wines. We use just one system for both of our restaurants, and we're not alone. Some of the best restaurants in the country are taking on the Vinfinity system. The guest gets a large selection of wines by the glass in great condition, and the restaurant eliminates waste. Tell your favorite restaurant about it. If you own a restaurant, install it. Find out more at VinfinitySystem.com or call 201-988-5953.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hey everybody, welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. We're talking with Bill Buford about the rainforest and how cocoa is one of those crops that can actually be profitably grown in the rainforest without, well, destroying it. You were talking, Bill, before the break about how much of the rainforest is being burned, which poor people often are turned to that method to because if you burn down the rainforest, the nutrients fall from the canopy of the rainforest into the ground and can support crops, but only for a couple of years. Mark likened the burning of the rainforest to the fires in San Diego. In a non-rainforest environment, when there's a forest fire, you know, forests are designed to, most regular forests are designed to recover from forest fires and come back. Rainforests aren't like that, are they?
They're not like that. They're a very, very complex network of just thousands of species and thousands of different plants and thousands of different trees. And they're in this interactive web of support that is impossible to replace. I mean, one of the reasons why the Earth isn't very good after a couple of years there is that there really isn't much nutrient in the Earth. Most of the nutrient comes from this very complex web of plant and animal life. And it's just, I mean, I don't know how much truth there is to the fact that the rainforest is meant to be producing all our oxygen, but it is certainly the crib of most of the Earth's life. I mean, something like 95% of all the species of the Earth comes from the rainforest. It's a powerful. You just, when you're down there, you just think, yeah, this is where it all started. And it was also astonishingly loud. I thought, I'm leaving New York City. I'm going to go get some sleep. I'm going to chill out. It's going to be quiet. It's loud. And it's loud because there's just so much animal life. It's a racket.
Well, and the animal life in the American West and in European forests and the tree life, pine trees, so many pine trees can't reproduce unless the conifers are heated by those pine cones are heated by a fire and explode. In a dry forest, it's designed to be able to withstand and to have forest fires every once in a while. A rainforest doesn't ever get spontaneous fires. You know, it's a rainforest. It's wet. And so slashing and burning is really it's a problem because it's not replaceable, it's not reversible.
That's right. So, well, one of the things I discovered is actually that though if you give the rainforest a chance, it regenerates, and that's the whole point for this guy Diego Badaro and Frederick Schilling, is that they have a fantasy that they'll get great funding to start buying up all this tortured and torched land and let the rainforest regenerate. They when we went into the Virgin Rainforest, we went through a pasture that some land that had been cleared for a pasture, and it was being used only 3 years ago, and already it's covered with trees. The rainforest very quickly reclaims its own.
Well, talk to us about the cocoa beans. You wrote in your article that if someone does take a cocoa pod and eat the fruit and then spit out the seeds on the ground, how long does it take for those seeds to germinate and start, you know, becoming a new cocoa tree?
About 6 hours.
Isn't that crazy?
That's amazing.
Quick.
That's no acorn. You know
it's
what I mean?
Quick. But it's quick because it's got to be because it's. I mean, that's the whole beauty of the seed, which is the source of chocolate. It's designed to protect itself from all these predators and bacterial invaders and all the things around it, and that's what in that protection is it is the flavor of chocolate. And that gives it its otherness, its out-of-this-worldness, its edginess. It's all there. All these are plant defenses against everything around it, and that's where the flavors are. And that's why it's unlike any other food we know.
So you've gotten more in-depth this subject than most people who've looked at it seriously. And what I like about your writing is you really can come at things from a gastronomic sensibility as well as a business sensibility and a romantic sensibility.
Yeah, there's a lot of romantic in there.
And chocolate is an ideal, you know, subject for romance. Chocolate and coffee are really cool places, and we have them as part of our everyday lives. We don't really know much about where they come from. Is it sustainable to grow? Is Schilling's vision of growing cocoa in the rainforest to help the rainforest and live peaceably and sustainably in the rainforest, does that work?
It completely works. You need a lot of land, and it's not as concentrated as the farming is, say, in West Africa, where they do this very industrial, fast farming. But it completely works, and it's the only way you can make money out of the rainforest, because otherwise the only way you can make money out of the rainforest is to destroy it. I mean, when I was down there, there's a little controversy because the mayor of one of the local towns had sold 120 acres of the trees on it of his own rainforest, which is completely illegal, but he's the mayor, and I mean, sort of typical of, I mean, that's Bahia, that's kind of what goes on there. We're talking about some pretty serious dreamers, and when I was down there, they announced one morning that they had an appointment in São Paulo with someone from the World Bank, and this is going to be the beginning of their project. And we started off, and we drove madly and lost control of the vehicle, and we thought we were about to topple and ended up stopping someplace and drinking too much, and finally they missed their flight and they didn't make it.
And the World Bank wasn't amused by that.
Well, the World Bank will always be there. Actually, you know, this is so Brazilian. Diego's got this sort of baronial voice, and so he tried to get the plane had left. And he tried to get the plane to come back and pick us up, and the plane wouldn't. But Diego said, sometimes they do.
Excuse me, Bill. Your article really doesn't look at Frederick Schilling in the best of lights. Is he the visionary who can make this come true, or does somebody else have to step in there and kind of make it happen?
Why do you think he's not in the best of lights?
I shouldn't be asking the question.
So I'm just curious. I think he's. I actually think he's kind of a visionary.
Mm-hmm.
What makes him different is that he thinks on a scale that's so big it's just not logical. There was a great exchange I had with his girlfriend when he started the company. A girlfriend that essentially he abandoned for the cacao goddess, in which she realized...
Didn't you ask me why I didn't think you looked at him in the best of lights?
Actually, hold on one second. We're going to take that when we come back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. The time is 11:55.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, and we're talking with Bill Buford about chocolate.
Bill, we got cut off a little bit by commercial, but you were telling us that you see Frederick Schilling as a visionary.
He's got a capacity to think on a very, very big scale.
Sorry about that. Go ahead.
He's got a capacity to think on a very, very big scale. And I was recalling that exchange I had with his girlfriend when the two of them very early on happened to be visiting Hershey, Pennsylvania, and she looked in Frederick's eyes and realized he thinks he can do a Hershey's. And his company, after all, was only 6 years old, 5 years old when he sold it. He thinks big.
Well, and by the way, he started a chocolate company by making 7 bars and sold it for $17 million
and
5 years later.
And filled his own molds and did everything by hand.
That's right.
That's pretty big. And by the way, is an authority in sort of changing the paradigm of how chocolate is made. So you know what? He acts pretty big, too.
Yeah, he acts pretty big. He has changed the paradigm. At that time, there wasn't organic chocolate. I think organic chocolate actually is very important because a lot of the West African chocolate, for instance, uses a pesticide called lindane in quantities that come up in measurable tests in often dark chocolates that you get in Europe. And he sort of changed the paradigm and what goes with what. He's got a kind of very, very fly, active, imaginative brain.
Well, we're talking about Fred Schilling, the founder of Dagoba Chocolate. You can find out more about Bill's article, more about Frederick Schilling and Dagoba Chocolate and the Rainforest in general on our website, restaurantguysradio.com.
Bill, thanks so much for being with us today.
I had great fun. Thank you for having me.
Take care, Bill.
Okay.
Bill's book is also, Bill's most recent book, one of several books, is Heat. It's one of our favorite books. You can find out more about that on our website and actually go.
Really one of my favorite books of last year, truly.
And order it. It makes a great Christmas present. Anyway, I hope that you've enjoyed the hour with us here at The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. The time is 12 noon.